This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell
from the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hidden Killers podcast.
We're up to segment number four in our coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. Let's head to the courtroom.
Thank you, Your Honor. The state just seeks to amend, according to Rule 7, a couple of clerical errors. In counts one, counts one and three, there's a conspiracy to commit murder and theft by deception. Grand theft by deception. And in count, I'll make sure I get the right number, seven, there's grand theft, and the language is clearly says by deceit and with the intent to deprive another of property. The state had inadvertently marked, instead of 18-2403-4 or 2A, which is a theft by deception, we had inadvertently marked 4A, which is theft by possession. However, the language of the indictment is clear that it's theft by deception. So we are asking to amend that 4A in those counts to the 2A to match the language of the actual charging document. And the other clerical error is in count five, on the overt act, ten, where it did read Alex going to the gun range in the months before October 9th, 2019. That was intended to be month, which is in compliance with what was presented in evidence. And so the state is moving to make those clerical changes. Nothing in this adds a new charge. It's still grand theft, and this brings the indictment further into compliance with the actual language used. And we do not believe that the substantial rights of the defendant would be affected in any way, shape, or form by this. She's been on notice the entire time by the language of the indictment.
All right. Who would be arguing for the defendants?
I will, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Archibald, if you'd like to present any argument in opposition, if there is any.
Your Honor, I have asked for a copy of an amended indictment. Haven't received that yet, but I can still make some argument while we're waiting for that. The indictment that was filed here, we're looking at the indictment that was signed by a grand jury foreman on May 25th of 2021. So 2 years ago, this indictment was filed with the court. It has not been amended for 2 years. We have requested the amendment as her defense team. We have asked for to amend this, and that's been denied. And now the state is asking to amend it 2 years later. And Idaho Code Section 19-1420 indicates an amendment of an indictment cannot be amended so as to charge an offense other than that for which the defendant has been held to answer. And so by changing the code sections of the statutes, they are changing the codes. Their proposal is to change the code sections from grand theft by intent to deprive another to grand theft by deception. So grand theft by deception is a different code section than grand theft by intent to deprive another of property. So these are different charges. They are not just mere clerical errors. And so what's happened here is the grand jury, if the grand jury indicted her on the wrong code section, then and we've been operating under that for 2 years. And so she hasn't entered a plea yet to the new code section as proposed by the state. So it does affect her substantial rights. So I have asked for a printout from the state of their new proposed indictment so that I can confirm their proposed language today as opposed to what the grand jury indicted her on some 2 years ago. And so that's my concern, Your Honor, is that it sounds like their proposal is not a mere clerical error, but it does affect the substantial rights of my client. And if that's the case, then this error is fatal.
All right. Response from the state, Mr. Wood.
Your Honor, we believe that the language of the indictment was clear and adequately put the defendant on notice of what she was charged with, that she was charged with grand theft by deception. I would note that either way, the state has, we believe we've met the burden of either of those. However, the plain language of the indictment is clear that she was charged with theft by the conspiracy to commit murder and grand theft by deception. It's in that. Not only is it in the heading, it's in the language.
All right. And to be clear again, Mr. Wood, which of those counts were you seeking to have amended in the information?
1, 3. And 7.
All right. Going back to just Mr. Archibald, as to the, well, I actually don't have any further questions as it would relate to count 5 and the request to change the overt acts language. So the court's considered both Idaho Code 19-14-20, which governs the amendment of an indictment, which is what we have in this case, an indictment returned by the grand jury. I've also reviewed Criminal Rule 7E, which also relates to amendment of an indictment. 7E states the court may permit amendment of a complaint, an information, or indictment at any time before the prosecution rests if no additional or different offense is charged and if substantial rights of the defendant are not prejudiced. 19-14-20 says an indictment or information may be amended by the prosecuting attorney without leave of the court at any time before the defendant pleads or at any time thereafter in the discretion of the court where it can be done without prejudice to the substantial rights of the defendant. An information or indictment cannot be amended so as to change or to charge an offense other than that for which the defendant has been held to answer. There's a case, State versus Jeske, 164 Idaho 862, 2019 case, that says the decision to permit an amendment is a matter within the discretion of the trial court. That cites to a case, State versus Severson, 147 Idaho 694. The court may allow an amendment of an information at any time before the prosecution rests, so long as doing so does not prejudice the defendant's substantial rights or charge the defendant with a different offense, citing to Criminal Rule 7 and Section 19-14-20, and a case, State versus O'Neill, 118 Idaho 244. So there is discretion here for the court to consider that under the rule. At the outset, I will note clearly the concerns raised by the defense that it just the timing's sort of unbelievable with the number of prosecutors that have worked this case for so long that it's not something that came up in the course of trial or testimony. It's just making a correction here on whatever day of the trial we're at. We've been in trial for a very long time, and we're getting towards the end of the trial. And this is the kind of motion that clearly the court doesn't like, having all of our jurors sitting around waiting for us to take these matters up that could have been done by motion at any point before now. So disappointing that the court has to consider this right now at this stage of the proceedings, but the rule does make clear that it can be done up until the time the state rests. The state has not yet rested. So there are four proposals sought to amend and change the indictment. The count 5 overt act 10, where it would be amended from months plural to month singular, the court finds that is more in the nature of a clerical correction and would not in any way affect or prejudice the substantial rights of the defendant by changing that. So the court will permit that overt act 10 in count 5 to be amended to the singular term month, not the plural term months. As it relates to counts 1, 3, and 7, count 1 is charged in the indictment as conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception, a felony. It then does list the code sites underneath. 18-2403-4A is what's specifically stated there. Looking at that, I guess a few things. There's multiple purposes of an indictment, but mainly to put the defendant on notice of what they're charged with, and also to advise and instruct the jury what the defendant's charged with. The code cites probably have no and should not have any significance to the jurors, as they'll be instructed on what the law is as it relates to the Idaho Code section, which in this case is 18-2403. So the difference is there's a 4A sub. The state wants to amend to a 2A. And so the court has to consider whether that amendment would be a substantial rights of the defendant coming into play as being prejudiced at this stage of the proceedings if the court were to allow that. There's another statute, I think, that can come into the analysis, which is Idaho Code 19-14-17, which talks about words of the statute. Words used in a statute to define a public offense need not be strictly pursued in the indictment, but other words conveying the same meaning may be used. When the court has considered the proposed amendments, count 2 under 19-2403-2A is a theft. Under A it says by deception, obtains or exerts control over property of the owner. 4A is not by deception. It's where someone takes property and, quote, intends to deprive the owner permanently of the use or benefit of the property. Because the language of the indictment, not the code cite, does include the term deception in count one, both in the caption of what count one is, what's already been read to the jurors in this case, and also in the charging language at the end of the first paragraph, it says to commit grand theft by deception. The court finds on that count that the proposed amendment would not, at this point, prejudice the substantial rights of the defendant, since the defense has been placed on notice that the theory under which the theft is alleged by the state is a theft by deception. So the court would find that the indictment may be amended under Rule 7E, as well as 19-14-20, as to count one, because it contains that explicit language of theft by deception. For that same reason, a mirroring language in count 3, which also is charged as, quote, conspiracy to commit first-degree murder and grand theft by deception, and in the charging body of the language, it also states to commit grand theft by deception, The court would find that did provide adequate notice to the defense throughout the proceedings of the theory under which the theft was being pursued, although it didn't conform necessarily with the subsection of 2403. So the court will permit the amendment on that count. And then finally, as it relates to count 7, which is a count of grand theft felony, that is just charged generally as grand theft, and the court considered that. It's charged under 4A. It does contain in the body of it as well the word deceit, saying that between Madison and Fremont counties, by deceit and with the intent to deprive another of property. And the court would note that that deceit language or deception is not contained anywhere in the 2403-4 subsection, but is only contained in the subsection 2. So the court would find again under 1914-20 that the indictment and under Criminal Rule 7E is not going to prejudice the substantial rights of the defendant. In this case, the motion's been made before the state rested, and for those reasons, then I'll permit the amendment as it relates to paragraph 7 of the indictment also. So the state's instructed to submit a conforming new amended indictment for filing in the case, which must be received by the court, obviously, before the jurors go in for deliberations and before the final instructions are completed in the case. That'll be the ruling on the motion then. Any questions on my ruling, Mr. Wood?
No, thank you.
All right. Any questions from the defense?
No.
All right. Thanks, counsel. With that being said, then, let's go ahead and bring our jurors back in.
All right, thank you. Please be seated.
Okay, we are on the record on KCR 22-21-1624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallo. The state has completed a witness who testified, and the state continues with its case in chief. Does the state have another witness to call at this time?
We do not, Your Honor.
So does the state rest?
The state rests.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. All right. Let me next inquire of the defense at this time, then. Is the defense going to be making any motions that would need to be made outside the presence of the jury?
Yes, Your Honor. It is customary for the defense to make a motion after the state rests. We'd like to do so.
Okay. Well, considering our timing in that motion, the court would note that there is a motion that will be heard outside of the presence of the jurors, and I'll note the holdover at lunch was another motion we were also hearing here. Given the time that that motion may take and for the court to prepare a ruling, would the defense prefer that we allow the jurors to be excused for the day, and I'll ask the state as well so that we can be prepared to proceed again in the morning?
May we have a sidebar on that issue?
Yes. All right, the court just had a sidebar with counsel, and we were talking about the best use of our time for the efficiency of the proceedings here. I'll note that at this stage of the proceedings, it's not unusual that we do have to have some time for administrative matters and hearing of motions in the case. So we're going to take another recess at this point to allow for some additional preparation. We'll have the jurors just wait until they can be brought back in, and I think that'll be a more efficient use of the jurors' time, and then we'll sort out an efficient schedule moving forward after today also, depending on where things land today this afternoon. So in lieu of excusing you earlier, which I had considered, we'll have you continue to wait and argue a motion outside of your presence and allow for the defense to do that. We'll then have you brought in and give you further instructions on how we'll be proceeding going forward. So these are the times. There was an instruction early on that said at times there are delays that occur when we're working on other things. That's what's happening now. So I'd ask you to not be discouraged by that, and we will diligently work to move things forward. We'll take another recess at this point and take up these legal issues outside of your presence.
All right, please.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. At this time, the state has rested. Mr. Archibald, is the defense making a motion at this point?
Yes, Your Honor. Under Rule 29 of the Idaho Criminal Rules, Rule 29 provides for a mechanism for the court to review the evidence that's been submitted and determine if there's been sufficient evidence on each count to proceed to the jury. So under Rule 29, we're asking the court to review the evidence and determine if there's sufficient evidence on each count, including the overt acts, as this is a complicated case, to submit the matter to the jury. I believe Rule 29 does give the court discretion to take that matter under advisement under Rule 29B, And so if the court needs some time to review the evidence, compare it to each count, we're okay with that. We're not opposed to the court taking the time necessary to review that. And so while the court reviews that, I would be asking for a break so that me and co-counsel and my investigator can meet with my client to determine how and if she wants to proceed with presenting a defense. I would ask, say it's about a quarter to two, I would ask for at least a 15-minute recess so that, and the marshal, I'd ask, can take us to a secure location so that we can have an open discussion about my client's right to proceed.
All right. One point I think needs to be clarified here as it relates to Rule 29. The 29B allows a decision on the issue to be reserved if it's at motion made at the close of all evidence. Under 29A, and we're at that stage of the proceedings, it's before submission to the jury, after the prosecution closes its evidence, then, according to the rule, if the court denies the motion at the close of the prosecution's evidence, the defendant may offer evidence. So what you're suggesting, Mr. Archibald, is I would say Rule 29A gives you the option to have me make a determination before you go forward with evidence. Under your proposal, I believe you'd be waiving that if you are permitting the court to take the judgment of acquittal under advisement before determining whether or not you're going to rest your case. So why don't you look at that, think about that for a moment, and with that in mind, I'll ask the state if you have a responsive argument under the Rule 29 motion that's been made.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right.
And I would cite to a couple cases for the court. State v. Huggins, 103 Idaho 442. It's an Idaho Court of Appeals case from 1982. It outlines the test for deciding a motion for judgment of acquittal under Idaho Criminal Rule 29 is as follows. The trial judge must review the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, recognizing that full consideration must be given to the right of the jury to determine the credibility of witnesses, the weight to be afforded evidence, as well as the right to draw all justifiable inferences from the evidence. Viewed in this manner, where the inculpatory evidence presented as to any essential element of the crime is so insubstantial that jurors could not help but have a reasonable doubt as to the proof of that element, a judgment of acquittal should be entered. The state's position in this case is it is a rare circumstance that judgments of acquittal tend to be appropriate. As the court already noted in citing to Idaho Criminal Rule 29, there are different times that defense may make a motion for a judgment of acquittal. We are under 29A before submission to the jury. It would be the state's position that we have presented evidence to support every element of all nine counts of the indictment, that we have presented evidence that would not lead to the jury having no choice but to have reasonable doubt. And we believe that this would be appropriate to be submitted to the jury for their consideration at the close of the defense's presentation of any evidence. So we would ask that the court deny the motion.
All right. Response, Mr. Archibald?
Your Honor, I understand the standard and I understand the language of the rule. Whether the court makes a decision under 29A or 29B, I'll leave that up to the court. If we do not present any evidence, then that issue would be moot in any event.
All right. With that in mind, then, the court would note I've raise that issue under Rule 29, where we're at A at this point. It's the type of motion that does require the court to look at each one of the elements of each of the counts, and the indictment's fairly lengthy in the number of counts, and so the court needs to go back through and review the evidence that's been presented to ensure that Rule 29 judgment of acquittal as to any of the given counts would not be appropriate given the standard I have to consider. So the court will need to take that issue under advisement, and what I'll do, given the comments there by Mr. Archibald, is I am reserving ruling on that motion, and if the defense wishes to move forward with their presentation of any evidence, then I'll, without prejudice for you to re-raise the motion, the court will make a ruling on the record, but will not be able to do so this afternoon. So it is under advisement, and Mr. Archibald will provide you time to have a private consultation with your client and Mr. Thomas. The court's instructed that in order to allow for that, this is the most secure setting here in the courtroom. We're going to require that everyone be cleared from the courtroom except for only the required security personnel that need to remain in the courtroom, and all other parties, including the court and any court staff, will need to exit the courtroom in order to allow for a privileged attorney-client conversation to be able to take place between counsel and your client at this time. So we'll be in recess until further notice. Mr. Archibald, Mr. Thomas, once you've concluded consultation with your client, please advise the court.
Thank you.
All rise.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right. We are back on the record on KCR 22-21-1624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallow. The state has rested its case in chief. We took a recess. A Rule 29 motion for judgment of acquittal was argued and taken under advisement by the court. Counsel for the defense wished to have time for a privileged and private communication with their client regarding proceeding forward at this time. So let me inquire of the defense now. Mr. Archibald, have you and Mr. Thomas had an opportunity to consult with your client?
Yes, Your Honor.
And how does the defense intend to proceed going forward?
Your Honor, we don't believe the state has proved its case, so the defense will rest.
Very well. Does the defense then is, I'll just inquire of your client, Mr. Archibald. So, Ms. Vallow, you do have the Fifth Amendment right to, in this case, according to the Fifth Amendment, it's guaranteed by the United States Constitution that no person shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against themselves, and this privilege applies to Idaho through the 14th Amendment. That guarantees that no person may be compelled in a criminal case to testify. So you do have that right and will maintain that right, and is it your decision to continue to maintain that right and not testify in this matter?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you for your response, and I appreciate counsel discussing that with your client. With that in mind, then, counsel, I believe we'll have the jurors brought back in. Mr. Archibald, if you intend to rest, let me just clarify with this Rule 29 motion. If you are going to rest, I think I would be reserving a decision on that under Rule 29B. Is that your understanding?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. The court will consider the motion under Rule 29B then, and it will remain under advisement, and the court will issue a ruling on that in due course. So with that in mind, we'll have the jurors brought in. Counsel, the court's schedule at this point would then have the jurors excused for the day. Tomorrow, the court will spend the day working with counsel throughout the day to get the jury instructions determined and completed and all copied and ready. And then we would be commencing with the closing arguments on Thursday morning. Is that the schedule that would be satisfactory to the state?
Yes.
Will that schedule work as well with the defense?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. I am going to advise the jurors then of that schedule so that they're made aware. At this time then, let's have the jurors brought in, please. Thank you, Mr. Bailiff. Please be seated. All right, at this time we are on the record on KCR 22-211624, State of Idaho versus Lori Noreen Vallo. We took a break for further matters outside the presence of the jurors. The jurors are now here returned. At this time, the state has rested its case in chief. This would be the time then for the defense to present its case. Mr. Archibald, upon consultation with your client, would you please advise the court on how the defense is proceeding at this time?
Your Honor, after consultation with my client, we don't believe the state has proven its case, so the defense rests.
Very well. The defense has rested as well at this time then. So I'll just advise the jurors that will conclude the evidence portion of this trial. What will happen next is the court will need to go through the jury instructions you'll be receiving before your deliberations begin. There will be a jury instruction conference with counsel tomorrow. Given the amount of evidence and the number of charges here, that will take some time. So we're going to have you be excused for tomorrow. We will continue then Thursday morning with the closing arguments, which will be presented to you by both sides, which will be a summation of the evidence, and that will take place before your deliberations begin, and then you'll be given your final jury instructions. So that will conclude the trial proceedings for today. At this point, then, you'll be excused until Thursday morning with tomorrow off. And so let me just please advise you with that extra day off. Again, please follow the court's admonition to not discuss the case amongst yourselves or with anyone else. Don't do anything to look the case up, to investigate the case. If you see any reporting on the case, please turn away from that and don't do anything which would affect your ability to maintain your impartiality in this case. The court and the parties appreciate your continued adherence to that admonishment each day as we break. So with that, we will come back on for additional argument, closing arguments on Thursday morning, and we'll plan on starting again at our normal time at 8:30. So that'll conclude the proceedings for today.
All rise, please.
Thank you. Please be seated. All right, counsel, I would just ask that the parties make themselves available tomorrow. I'll have my staff attorney reach out to you for some scheduling of when we'll be going on the record as it relates to the jury instructions. We'll be meeting with counsel first informally to go through the proposed jury instructions. Once we've gone through any agreed upon instructions, any that are contested will be placed on the record, and the court will make rulings on those in an open proceeding, and we'll let counsel know about what time we think we'll be prepared to meet with you first informally for the jury instruction conference tomorrow. So that will conclude the matter for today. Anything further from the state this afternoon?
No, thank you, Your Honor.
All right, thank you. Anything further from the defense?
No, thank you.
Okay, thanks, counsel. That'll conclude the day, and we will see you tomorrow.
That wraps up segment number 4 in our coverage today, the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. Press subscribe wherever you download podcasts. You don't miss any of our coverage, courtroom action, interviews, and discussions on the case. I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.
This is continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
Continuous coverage.
In the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell
from the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Hidden Killers Podcast.